Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And yes, this program is, in fact, live. Sorry about last night, but I explained what was going on, and I hope you understand. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It's where the program is live Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m., except for unavoidable absences, which last night was. If you go over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you'll notice there a tab called Chat Room. And that is the key to entering into the real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that takes place there during the times when the show is live. There you will be greeted this evening by the likes of Anatole, Hoghead, Jugapunch, Steve from Georgistan, Tim from L.A., Calliope Tim, and V.T. Blom. Otherwise known as Scott 2, I think. Yeah. And many others as the program progresses. Why, there's Jug of Punch just wandering into the room. And you can be there, too. Just pick out a screen name and a password, jump in, and you'll have a darn fine old time. All, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Ha! Yeah. Last night, yesterday, I guess, I'm not quite the road warrior I once was, but Monday was exhausting, but I managed to get in time to get behind the mic. Tuesday was a little bit of a recoup. And by the way, my apologies about the Tuesday podcast. It's up, but it's not. And in the limited time I've had since I found out, I have yet to find the answer to the problem. Now, if you wanted to hear Tuesday's podcast but you haven't, you can always go to podbean.com. And you can download. They've got an app for your mobile device. You can download it onto your desktop, whatever. And you can always catch the podcast there if it doesn't go up, or if I screw up the code somehow, which apparently I did. At White Rose Society, I'll be spending some time this evening trying to sort that out, and hopefully getting everything working again. But podbean.com. I always put the file up there as well, just to have an extra layer of redundancy. Okay, and again, my apologies. Yeah, I told you what it was like Monday. I had a sneaking suspicion Wednesday would be no different with Ferg's surgery, and guess what? It wasn't. Now make sure you're here. Be prompt. Be timely. Make sure you're here at 8 a.m. sharp. So, naturally, if you want to be somewhere on time, you need to be there 5 minutes early. And we were there 10 minutes early, which necessitated getting up at 5 o'clock, and Ferg had to do the pre-op shower scrub with the antimicrobial, antibacterial stuff. And so we got there to the hospital at about 10 minutes till 8. And that's when we found out that his surgery, that he had to be there promptly at 8 a.m. for, was scheduled for 1 p.m. No, I'm not kidding. All of those patients had been scheduled for 8 a.m. just to come and, you know, sit around and hang out and be nihil peros and miserable and heck of a way to run a railroad, let alone a hospital. Yep, all trains will leave at 8 a.m. You really couldn't run a railroad that way, could you? But that's, so by the time he had surgery, and you know, there was general anesthesia involved, and then by the time that he had gone through the recovery room process, and well, we rolled in the door too late to get the program on the air. So, my apologies. Again, my apologies for no program last night. It really was unavoidable. And I mean to say that when I got through the door, I was going to come back here and just check on things. And Agnes, Viking Warrior Princess, blocked the door and just pointed toward the bedroom. Now, get in there. And, I mean, as soon as I became horizontal, boom, unconscious, I was zapped. I was zonked. I was worn the hell out. And I guess part of that has to do with the fact that I live the life decaffeinated. So I don't have any stimulative help along the way. But that's what happened. That's where Wednesday's prayer meeting Wednesday went. And I'm sorry about that, because I hate missing prayer meeting Wednesday. But Ferg got through his surgery okay. He is uncomfortable, to say the least, and will be for a while yet. And hopefully he'll regain the use of those messed up digits and get back to his finger-style guitar playing. This is, of course, a listener-supported operation, and this here is the 13th day of October 2016. October is running away from us at a rate that is absolutely alarming. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and yes, there are thorns. A veritable multiflora rose thicket of them. Those of you in Appalachia know damned well what multiflora rose are. They are a curse and a blight upon the landscape here. They were introduced, multiflora rose was introduced to Appalachia in the 1950s by the United States Department of Agriculture as the living hedgerow. Apparently multiflora rose works really well out west on broad, flat, open spaces. Here it just took the place. And you want to talk about thorns? It'll shred denim. It really will. So when I say that tonight we have thorns like multiflora rose, understand that means a lot of thorns. Did I do the "Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid" part? I was kind of waiting on Tim to pick his old job back up. But so yeah, "Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid," and yes, listener supported program. And because I was absent last night, we would have fallen into a $200 hole, but thanks are in order. You may recall that on Tuesday, Bob in Texas put a $100 challenge on the table. I got so wrapped up in conversation, I didn't get around to thanking Janie, also in Texas, for meeting that challenge. So, and Frank jumped in as well, so we were good there. That leaves yesterday, and we would be in a hell of a hole were it not for Franklin and now Bill up in New Hampshire. So this evening we've just got $200 to raise, which is flipping awesome. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13. Hopefully we can knock that out, knock that down. If you want to help, go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, fill out the fields there. leave the one blank about what you do down at Uncle Bill's architectural firm, and go from there. If you'd like to become a recurring subscriber, just click the box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and you will be right there. And we really appreciate our subscribers because they help make up, pick up the slack on nights when things are kind of slow. So thank you, one and all, to all of our subscribers. Again, thank you very much. And remember, bumper stickers go out to subscribers. And I've still got more going out. A horn bumper sticker or the exclusive They Want It All bumper sticker with complete with a hog in a top hat designed by our buddy Scott in Sweden, who is presently with his lovely bride Brigida traveling electrically around the Iberian Peninsula. You can follow his travels at slowpokeroadtrip.com. Interesting reading. Good times. That's all available. The wild rice offer is still on the table, by the way, because the wild rice is still in processing. I checked in with my buddy up in the Northwoods. Remember, $60 gets you a gift of a pound of wild rice. $100 gets you a gift of two. So that's still out there and a definite possibility. So have we covered all the bases? I think. Yeah. Oh, the mailing address. If you prefer not to use PayPal. And since people did go to the trouble of figuring this out, if you want to just use a credit card and not PayPal, there's a button there that says proceed with credit card, and you don't have to have a PayPal address as long as you use that. Now, and it is doable because I checked the other. We had three different people check. And thanks to Smitty. And thanks to Jules. And I'm sorry, it slipped my mind. The third person who took one for the team there as well. So, if you prefer the United States Postal Service, and some people do, Boss Man Wayne takes care of that. He pulls the red pickup truck right up there to the UPS store, checks to make sure, checks to see whether or not the Grand Kleagle is in there picking up the mail for the Klan, and then takes his spider-proof gloves and goes and checks the mailbox when he knows there's something coming. He doesn't have to take his spider-proof gloves with him. And instead just takes his anti-Klan axe handle. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, then the address is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay? So we got $200 to raise this evening. It's just a regular, ordinary, middle of October-ish kind of evening. Bridge Day coming up on Saturday here in the New River. New River Tourism Area, New River Gorge Tourism Area. About 100,000 people are expected to walk out onto the longest steel arch bridge in the Western Hemisphere and watch base jumpers leap off the bridge with parachutes and land hopefully on the banks of the New River and sometimes in it. A good time is had by all, and all kinds of fun. Bridge Jam is taking place Friday and Saturday. Lots of cool bluegrass and newgrass and some rock and roll and that kind of stuff going on. And I'll probably go out and if you start on this side. No, there's no bungee, not that I'm aware of, Marty. No bungee, because that would just be kind of a pain in the butt. It's about base jumping. People can bungee jump other places, but you This is one of the few places you can legally base jump. So I'll probably go out, and it involves about 5-10 miles worth of walking, if you do it right. And it looks like we're going to have good weather for it, so it should be an enjoyable weekend. I think there's even going to be a chili cook-off in Fayetteville, and I loves me some chili. But anyway, that's Saturday. It has nothing to do with the broadcast schedule. But it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there's plenty to work with, as there always seems to be. And I got to tell you, I am and have been, and yet somehow I seem always to get trapped in it. I'm sick to death of talking about Donald Trump. Because if you do this kind of work, what you'll find is that it gets annoyingly difficult to find stuff to talk about that isn't Trump. It's annoying as hell. Trump here, Trump there, here a Trump, there a Trump, everywhere a Trump, Trump. Blah. But I did manage to find a few things that might captivate our attention. No, Asa, Brother Deacon Asa asking, are you planning to jump off the bridge? No, is that a suggestion, Asa? No, I don't do that. I've never even whitewater rafted the New River, or the Gauley, God knows. That thing's crazy, the Gauley River, and Bridge Day is the culmination of Gauley River season. The tourism season ends with Bridge Day. Because beginning in mid to late August, they release the water out of Summersville Dam and create these monster rapids down the Gauley River Gorge. And that all ends on Saturday. And I've never done it. Yeah, I probably should, but I never have. Labor man in the chat room. FYI, breaking news. Donald J. Jagoff Scrump is a degenerate, coke-sniffing pervert, mental defective. I guess we're... That does sort of cover it all, doesn't it? But I'm sure we'll wind up talking about it anyway, because this, I mean, I'm fairly conversant with American history and American presidential history. I'm certainly no expert, but this is an election unlike any other. Never before have the two parties put forward candidates so absolutely not liked and not trusted by the electorate. We have never before seen an election where the choice was one of defending one's beliefs not by voting for someone, but by voting against another. But these are interesting times, and we live in them. So that's where we are. For a long time, I've referred to Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane. I've referred to him as the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini and, more recently, Benito Cheeto. These are, of course, direct references to the autocratic fascist ruler of Italy, whom he shockingly resembles from time to time, you know, except for the hair part. And he kind of, and hopefully we'll get past this, because there really is interesting stuff to talk about. He went full, fascist today. And he's kind of been doing it for a couple of days, but in this case, it had a definitely recognizable quality to it, in as much as the topicality of his full-on fascist rant. Because nobody rants against, nobody does anti-Semitism, let's put it that way. Nobody does anti-Semitism quite like the fascists. And that's where the Orange Menace went today. I mean, nasty. Today, it was Palm Beach, Florida. And he opined hatefully about a corrupt global establishment. And that corrupt global establishment is raiding our country and surrendering the sovereignty of our nation. These, of course, can be translated directly out of the Italian, the original Italian and the original German. The international Jewish banking conspiracy. Ring a bell, anybody? And it's shocking, but it's not. I mean, the apocalypticism, the I'm the only one who can solve this problem business. This election will determine whether we remain a free country in the truest sense of the word, or we become a corrupt banana republic controlled by large donors and foreign governments. Hello, Citizens United? And he doesn't even disagree with Citizens United. And foreign governments, said the guy who promotes specious talking points from a Russian online news operation. Yeah. I mean, there's been talk. You wonder if the guy likes B&D, because he certainly is talking about shackles a lot lately. Up in the, I'm sure, soon to be frozen north, Ron in Canada writes, regarding Clinton versus Trump and the race to the bottom, I'm reminded of the original advertising slogan for Ex-Lax, this too shall pass. Hopefully we'll be on to something else by Thanksgiving. Well, if Hillary Clinton wins, then we'll be talking about what we have to do to pursue a progressive agenda and get real answers to the real problems that face this nation. Some of that conversation will be dictated in terms of what the makeup of the House and Senate looks like. And the other part of it is, America being a permanent political campaign now, by November the 9th, we'll be talking about who the early front-runner Republican challenger is for Hillary Clinton if she wins. If Donald Trump should happen to win on November 9th, I doubt if any of us will be sober enough to carry on a conversation. I will probably be sucking the Thorazine straight out of the darts, and Agnes won't even have to shoot them at me. But, and the thing is, there is other stuff to talk about, and I hope we get to it this evening. The Trump campaign is in full paranoid reaction mode, screaming that all this business with the women now and who have come out and said, "Yeah, he groped me. Yep, kissed me against my will." This is all a setup, and Trump is screaming that he will sue the New York Times. The New York Times, I'm guessing, is not blanching, being as how they are the they were the named defendant in New York Times versus Sullivan that established what one has to do to prove actual malice. Hint, there's no actual malice involved in publishing these witness victim allegations. And the women have been very, very plain in saying that they came forward because they heard him deny having engaged in the conduct about which he bragged. There's a lot of pathology in that family. The junior Donald, who apparently, to see photographs, also inherited his father's little puckered anus mouth, he and his brother Eric. Said that, well, you know, the fact that his father talks about sexually assaulting women, yeah, it just makes him human. I think it makes him a normal person, not a political robot. Interviewed on WBT Radio, Donald Jr. said, "Come on, guys, it's so ridiculous. I've never heard anything dumber in my life. All of a sudden, 2-3 weeks before election, someone comes out. It's not like he hasn't been in the public eye for 30 years. Aha! True! But here's the difference. The other times he was in the public eye, he was in a position of ultimate power. And there was not much that anybody could do about it because, well, if you worked at a business in his building, And see, that's in the nature of a sexual harassment claim, is that the person doing the harassing enjoys a position of superiority such that the harasser can intimidate by virtue of superior access to power. Trump does not have that access to power now. He's a political candidate. And for all that we say about how corrupt our political system is, political candidates cannot simply threaten their way out of nasty-ass problems like this. So, yeah, he's been in the public eye for 30 years, but for 30 years, there's been no one who could do anything about it. And, you know, had he not denied on October the 9th, had he not denied outright ever having groped, grabbed, or spontaneously kissed on women, it's possible these women would have remained silent, but he did deny it. And thus, what they are coming forward with is referred to in legal circles as impeachment evidence. Not impeachment like in the Constitution, but rather impeaching his credibility. Or in this case, absolutely destroying whatever tatters of it remained. But the junior Mar-a-Lago Mussolini said, I've had conversations like that with plenty of people where people use language off color. They're talking, two guys amongst themselves. No, dumbass, your dad was on a bus with a lot of other people on it talking with Billy Bush for a television program, and he just didn't happen to know the mic was hot. Meanwhile, you might find this interesting. Someone went dumpster diving through Donald Jr.'s Twitter timeline. It was back on the May the 15th of 2011 when Donald Jr. tweeted, Lesson for the night, if you look like Mark McGrath, you too can sexually harass the hell out of anyone. HR rules don't apply, winky face. Ha ha, ha ha. Suddenly, that tweet has disappeared. I know. It's just a little coinky dinky, isn't it? Sure. That is just a couple of guys sitting around rapping, you know? But this really is quickly turning into a sort of Cosby situation. Because where in the New York Times story you had a woman who'd been a secretary, a woman who had been a sales rep or something for a paper company and got groped in first class on a flight that Trump was on. And other allegations wherein young women who were beauty pageant contestants talked about how he did this thing where he just marched into the dressing room while the contestants were in various stages of undress, and that it just so happened to be when they were changing for the bikini portion of the pageant, and about which, interestingly, he had bragged of doing on air to a mic that he knew was hot in an interview with Howard Stern. Well, enter Lisa Boyne. She was a food business in the, she was in the food business back in the mid-90s. And she remembered an occurrence where Trump had women walk around in front of his table and he looked up their skirts to see if they were wearing panties. It, by the way, since we've got the first panty reference of this 13th day of October, 2016, it might be a good time to recall that Roger Ailes, formerly of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, is advising Donald Trump, and Roger Ailes himself was reported at a company party at somebody's home to have looked at a female Fox employee jumping on a trampoline and saying, I sure hope you're not wearing panties under there. Yeah, panties. Yep. Lisa Boyne told Huffington Post, it was the most offensive scene I've ever been a part of. I wanted to get the heck out of there. By way of defense, a spokeswoman for the Trump campaign named Hope Hicks said, Mr. Trump never heard of this woman and would never do that. There's only one problem. The event did happen. It was the summer of 1996, a second witness confirmed. And at some point in time, women were getting on tables. He was constantly talking about himself, who he was dating, who he was sleeping with, who he was trying to sleep with. I just remember feeling very surprised and upset. He spent a lot of time that evening talking about his sexual conquests. And since Lisa Boyne was not a model, Trump didn't come after her. Instead, he was more interested in my opinion of who I think he should sleep with. I remember that vividly. She went on and said, I met lots of famous, influential, wealthy people. None of them were ever as vulgar, as disgusting, as rude, as sexist, as such a low excuse for a human being that I've ever met. I was so deeply offended. I felt that, like with Bill Cosby, the more people that come forward, the more legitimacy the story will have. I find it hard to believe that he's changed. That's who he was. He was somebody who was interested in women as sex objects, and their only merit was their beauty. And Jagov that he is, apparently, there's even a hot mic moment where he makes a remark about a little girl and then says, hey, just think about this. I'll be dating her in 10 years. Hoo-wee! So is that enough Trump for one evening? Or is there more to talk about? Well, this might be enjoyable. Mark Kasowitz is Donald Trump's lawyer. And he has, of course, threatened to sue the New York Times for libel. David McCraw is general counsel for the New York Times. Correspondence between lawyers can be quite entertaining because it's not necessarily subject to the litigation itself, and lawyers know lots of fancy ways without ever using a dirty word of saying, fuck off. And go intercourse yourself and stuff. David McCraw, general counsel to the New York Times, has responded to Mark Kasowitz. I write, dear Mr. Kasowitz, colon, no comma, this is business. I write in response to your letter of October 12, 2016, concerning your client Donald Trump, the Republican Party nominee for President of the United States. You write concerning our article, two women say Donald Trump touched them inappropriately, and label the article as libel per se. You ask that we remove it from our website and issue a full and immediate retraction and apology. We decline to do so. Fuck off. Go piss up a rope. That's what you and I would say, but he's a fancy, high-priced lawyer. And then he sets about schooling Trump's little pettifogger. The essence of a libel claim, of course, is the protection of one's reputation. Mr. Trump has bragged about his non-consensual sexual touching of women. He has bragged about intruding on beauty contestants in their dressing rooms. He acquiesced to a radio host's request to discuss Mr. Trump's own daughter as a piece of ass. That was Ivanka. Multiple women not mentioned in our article have publicly come forward to report on Mr. Trump's unwanted advances. Nothing in our article has had the slightest effect on the reputation that Mr. Trump, through his own words and actions, has already created for himself. But there is a larger and much more important point here. The women quoted in our story spoke out on an issue of national importance, indeed, an issue that Mr. Trump himself discussed with the whole nation watching during Sunday night's presidential debate. Our reporters diligently worked to confirm the women's accounts. They provided readers with Mr. Trump's response, including his forceful denial of the women's reports. It would have been a disservice not just to our readers, but to democracy itself, to silence their voices. We did what the law allows. We published newsworthy information about a subject of deep public concern. If Mr. Trump disagrees, if he believes that American citizens had no right to hear what these women had to say, and that the law of this country forces us and those who would dare to criticize him to stand silent or be punished, we welcome the opportunity to have a court set him straight. Oh. Sincerely, comma, David McCraw. If you're used to reading legal correspondence, you know that that paper was smoldering when it came out of the envelope and into Mr. Kasowitz's hands. I don't think there is any... Donald Trump files lawsuits. Anybody with the price of the filing fee and a typewriter, or, you know, a sharp stick, a little pile of dog shit, and a few old leaves to scratch on, can file a lawsuit. It does not mean that the allegations therein contained are true. Yeah, this goes past fuck off. This verges over into eat shit, bark at the moon, fuck off and die, you fucking fucker. And frankly, Donald Trump deserves no less. He would deserve no less even if the allegations, whatever the allegations were true, but not as gross as this. Because this letter, this threatening letter from Mark Kasowitz, and how icky do I feel when I find myself defending the New York Times or for-profit journalism? Donald Trump has the soul of a fascist dictator. If he could declare, if he could operate simply by his own fiat, the New York Times would be shuttered. Or else would publish nothing but glowing articles about the magnificence of Donald Trump. This is actually an issue. Our interpretation, our modern interpretation of the First Amendment, buys us no small amount of trouble. It allows, for instance, Donald Trump to suggest that one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers assassinate the Democratic nominee for the presidency and get away with it. It permits all manner of vile, filthy, dangerous, and insightful communication. The modern interpretation of the First Amendment allows for a Supreme Court to declare that they themselves will have a 250-foot buffer around their space, but that a woman seeking reproductive health care has no right not to be accosted by sweet Granny McClucky shoving a picture of an aborted fetus in her face. But it also makes sure that to the extent that anybody, any media outlet in the United States is trying, that we can actually read, see, hear, watch attempts, no matter how poor, how paltry, how tawdry, to inform the public of the nature of the political contest that faces them and on which they will make a decision in, let's see, ciphering again. Let's see, that'd be 7, that'd be 17, 25 days. Yeah. Well, thank you very kindly, Thomas. Subject line, why Bob? You guys are getting creative trying to get around the Bob gimmick rule. Good on you, Thomas. Why Bob? Such language, worthy of some say. I love it. Stamp of approval. Frankly yours. Thomas. Thank you, Thomas. Clarence. Trump campaign slogan. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Yeah, it's a little too... the words are a little too bigly for Trump, but still, I get the point. Will in Chicago asks that I pass my regards along to the chat room. He can't get in right now because his laptop is being non-cooperative and he's running on a Mac right now. He says he'll try to be back as soon as he can. Thanks, Will. Thanks for letting us know. Subject line about the election, Tim from L.A. writes, after taking my analytic class, I understood how statistics work, and a mathematician statistician professor who was interviewed on our local CBS news affiliate, whose percentage of finding out who wins the popular vote and then the White House since 1981 is stumped. The professor looked back at previous elections since the 18th century, and that's pretty much all of them. Using multiple factors, and if a minimum of 6 factors are met, that person wins. The first oddity was the Bush v. Gore, where the SCOTUS sided with Bush and the popular vote did not result in a win. Still, the professor looked at Hillary versus Trump, and he said that Trump won all 6 factors in order to win the popular vote and possibly the elections, but then the prof had a caveat. Because of Trump being an outlier, voting history may be changed forever, and even though Trump looks to win the popular vote, he may not win the White House, thus making Trump a danger to history, and his antics may have changed the stats forever. Now, if Trump wins the White House, then it's business as usual, but if Hillary wins, then the elections contest will never be the same. The prof also recommended that we get rid of the Electoral College vote, too. Well, then he's on board with Andrew Jackson, the first person to suggest that, at least the first president. And I reiterate, mainly because I want this idea to take hold, that we have entered a time in American history when we are always... always at risk. Because as I have said, even if Trump is trounced, and he's not going to be, he's going to get at least 40% of the vote. And he may yet win the election, okay? Democrats will use any excuse they can find not to go out and vote. And frankly, there's nothing positive about Hillary that makes people want to go and vote for her. If anything, they are excited about going and trying to keep Trump from the White House. And I don't say this as a Hillary hater. I'm not. You know, I threw in the occasional, the devil, you know, just to keep the, little greeny axe handy, or happy. She's not. What about Vince Foster? Fuck off. She's a hard worker. She's one of those people that I have no doubt in law school. I have no doubt whatsoever. When she was in law school, you could not drag her out to drink a beer to save your immortal soul. She was studying. Always studying. Maybe a little sleep deprived in the morning, but she was always more prepared than anybody else. She probably briefed 200 cases in advance in every horn book. There are always people like that in law school, and they almost uniformly get excellent grades. It's not, you know, they don't go on to become particularly creative lawyers or really, really great advocates in front of a jury. They go on to become really, really thorough, well-compensated law firm lawyers. And they, you know, they write on the law review and stuff. And a lot of those go on to become law school professors. The lawyers in the Horn Family Community Congregation will probably go, yep, Bob, yep, that's it. She's not the devil. Not by a long damn shot.
Oh, God, she's a warmonger. Jesus Christ, haven't you heard what Julian Assange said?
Fuck Julian Assange. He's a libertarian right-wing piece of shit, and I don't have any problem saying that. Because he said, if he were an American citizen, he would more than likely be a Republican libertarian type. And I got no time nor use for none of those. Not even precious Julian Assange. We've got ourselves a little shooting war heating up at the down at the ass end of the Arabian Peninsula, in case you didn't notice. We allege that the Houthi rebels lobbed a couple of missiles at one of our warships that fell considerably short of those ships and landed in the water. But nonetheless, we dropped a couple of million dollars worth of ordnance on a village that we claimed had radar installations on them. You know, just to show them we could. Turned whatever it was we hit into a bombed-out, smoking heap of rubble, for which I'm sure the Houthi rebels will be more than forgiving and not remember us for 52 generations until the day of retribution finally arrives. The warmongering continues, and yes, the allegations are being made that, well, they must have got them goddamn missiles from the Iranians. Goddamn Iran. So you see where that goes. And we kind of got snookered into doing it because Saudi Arabia is, you know, bombing the living bejesus out of men, women, children, civilians. But what do you expect of our partners in peace? You know, the majestic, serene, noble, royal, highness graciousnesses there, the House of Ibn Saud, who cut off more heads than ISIS does, but are the good head loppers. So, France, the UK, US, we inked a $1.5 billion arms deal with Saudi Arabia. And we like the fact that they send us boatloads of oil and send boatloads of oil to Europe and Asia and, you know, our buddies. So what the hell? What's a, what's a cruise missile or two, huh? Interestingly, Hillary Clinton didn't have a goddamn thing to do with any of that. We're in a situation where we're almost guaranteed to get into that kind of crap. And it, by the way, no. If Donald Trump was president, he'd be asking the general staff if it would be okay to drop a nuke or two on Sana'a, Yemen. Right. Subject line, stinking up the joint. No doubt you've heard of or read of the Legislative Parliament in Australia, New South Wales Legislative Council, which unanimously declared Trump, among other things, a revolting slug unfit for public office. This is a creature whose almost supernatural ability to piss everyone off is no longer worthy of comment. And why use the man's real name when shit-ass works just as well? Regards, Steve in China. Well, Steve, Benito Cheeto, Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Great big steaming orange pile of shit. I've used that. But then again, language being language, given his odious conduct, maybe his own name just becomes a stand-in for all that odiousness. By the way, and a note earlier in the day, a note from our buddy Todd in Maryland. Todd says, and includes a photo, my daughter said we look alike. I don't know. What do you think, Todd? I don't think so. I think you've got me beat by a mile. Todd says, I've been trying to spread the Horn Malloy message to Nina and her friends, but they're kids and find the green bashing unbecoming. And when I tried to retort, Nina said, how can a 50-year-old man that screwed things up tell us how to vote? Then she said, we both wear Ray-Bans from the 1980s. By God, I'll have you know, I bought my Ray-Bans in 2000. It was after my first pair of Ray-Bans got stolen by that smirking little skipping skinny jeans wearing Belgian fuck. I bought those in 2013. Todd says, I tried to tell her that if it were not for the 80s, she would never have lived. Would not have lived her privileged, charmed life. Do we look alike as old guys? My very old dude regards, Todd. Hey, I don't know. I don't see it. I think you're a far more handsome guy, Todd. I wouldn't compare myself to me. I have a face made for radio. I've said all along. I said during the primaries that I was going to stand with the young people who wanted Bernie. And I'm the one who said that young people have a dog in the fight. And a bigger dog in the fight than we do. And that, in fact, the size of one's dog in the fight reduces as one ages. So that by the time one gets to be the age of, say, Hillary or Trump, 68 and 70 respectively, we're talking about toy fucking poodles in the fight. Right now, I feel like about a schnauzer. Young people, you know, Irish wolfhound. And, of course, I don't tell people how to vote. One can only be accused of telling people how to vote if one suggests that that a woman who has never held anything more than a uh, than a a paltry city council position is not ready to be president, especially when that alleged presidential candidate can't tell the difference between fucking Columbus, Ohio, and Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm not going to tell anybody how to vote, no matter what their age is, Todd. But I will tell them, because it's goddamn factual, that there are only two candidates for president. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Jill Stein is not a candidate for president because she can never win the office. She can say she's a presidential candidate. She can also claim to be the Easter Bunny and the Queen of the May. It doesn't make it so. Same for Gary Johnson. Although Gary Johnson would probably ask, what's the Queen of the May? Brother Deacon Gerald, chairman of the Building and Grounds Committee, who apparently has been deep in the crawl space lately, there may be an announcement forthcoming at some point, says, she's not the devil? Okay, how about a demon? Would you meet halfway on demon? Well, if we're meeting halfway to demon, we're somewhere down around demiurge at that point, aren't we? I mean, I've forgotten my Dungeons and Dragons lingo. But it's fact. And by the way, the argument, well, okay, like, but we're going to, like, vote for Jill because, like, you know, we want to have, like, the 5%. So, like, the Greens can, you know, like, get, like, federal funding. Nah, I addressed that one, too. Federal funding is not going to get you elected to office in a country whose entire campaign finance system is predicated on paying to play. Even before Citizens United. And by the way, as for 50-year-old men screwing things up, I didn't screw anything up. Oh, no. I've been trying to unscrew things. Because, among other things, I may be a 53-year-old guy, but I got a 7-year-old grandkid. Oh, and as far as those dogs in the fight are concerned, the 7-year-old grandkid is the Irish wolfhound. The 20 and 30-somethings, you've already moved down the ladder. You're like, you know, standard poodles now compared to the 7-year-olds. So, let's not be quite so smug. Because that Stein vote you're thinking about casting? Yeah, that's 20-somethings fucking things up for 7-year-olds. Sorry. Knives have a way of having double edges. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, right? Yeah. Hey, thanks. Thanks, Glenn, for getting us started this evening. We've got $180 in fundraising to go now. Thank you very kindly. Much obliged. It's about 3 minutes past the hour. I'm sure Glenn would love to have some company. About $180 worth. 18 at 10, 10 at 18, 1 at 180, 2 at 90, 4 at 45, 8 at 2250, 16 at 11 and a quarter, that kind of thing. New subscribers, welcome. Let's take a little break. It being a Thursday and whatnot, that would mean that the Green News Report with Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen is on the way. Also, this being Conversation Radio, your conversation. You know how to reach the program, I trust. Area code 304-574-8178. Or area code 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. Yeah. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Jump right in. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you've never communicated that way, by all means, reach out and just let me know. Put a note in there saying Horn Listener, Thorn in the Side Thursday, something like that. Just let me know that you're not some random spammer. Courtesy of Scott in San Diego, regarding 50-year-olds screwing things up. I'm 62, Scott says. Things were pretty much screwed up when I got here. Been trying to unscrew them for decades. It's a process. Got to be in it for the long haul. This ain't gravy-trained dog food. You can't just add warm water and stir and then stand around passively waiting for it to make its own gravy right in the bowl. Yum, yum! I know. Hardy says, just goes to show you can't just BS kids. I ain't BSing anybody. It is not BS to say that only one of two people will be elected president of the United States, and neither of them are Jill Stein. Or ever will be. The only way a Green candidate will ever be elected president is if a whole bunch of Democrats defect. And frankly, there's nothing about the Green Party to make a majority of Democrats want to defect. Isn't. I align with a lot of green issues, but the problem is it's not that I align with green issues, it's that green issues align with progressive issues, and there's only one of the two parties extant that can achieve them. And it's up to progressive people to put the weight behind those the candidates who can achieve those goals. Hint, none of them will ever be green candidates. At least not within my lifetime, and probably not within the 20-somethings either. The only reason we've got Republicans now instead of Whigs is because of the vicissitudes that attended the late 1850s, and particularly the presidency of one James Buchanan, our only bachelor president. Whose failure to try to do anything at all to keep the Union together in his 4 years in office resulted in the Democratic Party falling apart and the Whigs, which were moribund, morphing into the Republicans, leading to the election of Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. We can have it. We can have it. We just gotta, you know, take it. But to take it, you got to have enough people to do that. And the Greens don't and never will. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Call it the-
It's Thursday, October 13, 2016.
Elections have consequences.
Al Gore and Hillary Clinton rally millennial voters to hashtag vote climate. Federal appeals court allows construction to resume at the Dakota Access Pipeline. North Carolina grapples with Hurricane Matthew's toxic aftermath. Plus, Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon calls for a day of prayer for oil.
Because of course she does. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Looks like we dodged a bullet a little bit with that storm. However, with Donald Trump talking about women, it has been upgraded to a Category 5 storm.
Inconvenient truth. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we haven't heard much lately from Al Gore. We continue to hear about Al Gore from climate deniers, but we actually heard from him down in Florida this week.
Yes, we did. Former Vice President Al Gore joined Democratic presidential candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in the key swing state of Florida on Tuesday, tying together the debacle of the Florida 2000 election to Hurricane Matthew and climate change to rally young voters. Citing the boom in renewable energy technology and jobs in the U.S., Gore told millennials they are key to achieving successful climate action.
Here's the really good news that more people should know. We can change this. We now have the ability to change this. Please take it from me. Every single vote counts. Every single vote counts.
Oh, what would he know about it?
And in a speech devoted entirely to climate change, Clinton again highlighted her rival Donald Trump's climate science denial. She went deep into impacts and solutions, highlighting that millions are already being spent to protect Florida's cities from rising sea levels. She focused on detailed policy solutions to accelerate the transition to renewable energy with new infrastructure jobs and building resilience to help communities deal with climate impacts. But to get there, she said, the most important step is voting climate.
Climate change needs to be a voting issue. We need to elect people up and down the ballot at every level of government who take it seriously and are willing to roll up their sleeves and get something done. We cannot risk putting a climate denier in the White House at all. That is absolutely unacceptable.
Wonder who she's talking about.
Meanwhile, Hurricane Matthew is gone, but its record flooding lives on to cause a major public health threat in North Carolina. The floods have inundated the state's massive industrial hog and chicken farms, drowning potentially millions of livestock and flooding massive manure waste lagoons. North Carolina's Republican Governor Pat McCrory says officials are working to quickly dispose of decaying animal carcasses that could contaminate the water supply. No damage assessment yet on the flood's impact on toxic coal ash waste ponds. In North Dakota, construction resumed this week on a disputed portion of the four-state Dakota Access Pipeline near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation after a federal appeals court ruling allowed pipeline construction to resume on private land. The Army Corps of Engineers has still halted construction on public lands that it controls near and under the Missouri River. Dozens of protesters were arrested this week trying to stop construction, including actress and activist Shailene Woodley. In solidarity with the Dakota Access Pipeline protests.
Right now you're under arrest for trespassing.
Okay.
And I'm sure you understand that.
What would you like for me to do?
At least 9 protesters were also arrested this week at 5 other key pipeline sites. That was after allegedly using tools to temporarily shut down the flow of crude oil at remote valve stations in 4 states. It was an action coordinated by the group Climate Direct Action. Reuters reports that the action did no damage to the pipelines, but it did highlight the vulnerability of pipelines to these low-tech attacks. Finally, Oklahoma's Republican Governor Mary Fallon has proclaimed Thursday is Pray for Oil Day, asking Oklahomans to pray for our oil industry amid the crash in global oil prices. Oklahoma's budget relies heavily on revenue from the boom in oil and gas in the state, and officials have failed to diversify the state's economy, even amid the growing impact on its water supplies and earthquakes linked to the fracking industry.
She should pray that no one gets killed by one of those earthquakes. And, of course, it is that oil and gas boom that Oklahoma is relying on that also helped lead to the crash in prices that now Oklahoma is decrying and praying will somehow change. Keep praying. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. O-K-L-A-H-O-M-A, Oklahoma. Yo!
Yeah, I saw that one coming from a mile away. Brad and Desi always do a great job. And that wasn't some article from The Onion. This was really Pray for Oil Day. You know, pray for the continued heating up of the planet so that the human species can become a little less viable with every tiny little part per million of CO2 that we add to the atmosphere. And, hey, why not add some, you know, methane into the mix, too? What a party, what a party. What a world, what a world, what a world. I know he's prepping for his program, but let's run over to the Skype line real quick and check in with Thomas from FYINation.com. Hey, Thomas.
Lord, I have a prayer for you, if you don't mind, Bob. Brother Rob.
Testify.
I need me some oil. We need to get a gushing going on here. We need to have a supernatural force just bring down upon us some of that black, just gold.
Texas tea.
It just makes us just.
Thomas, assuming they're praying to the right God and everything. There's already a global glut of oil, which drove prices down. So having more oil in Oklahoma would just make prices go lower.
No. You are forgetting one thing, my friend, brother Bob.
I'm using that thinky thing again. All right. Yeah, okay.
You are forgetting American exceptionalism. We will exceptionalize our oil. It will be exceptional oil. Because it comes from our ground. It ain't coming from no Saudi Arabian oil ground where they don't like them women folk. It will be American exceptional oil. And we will burn
exceptionally.
Yes.
And it will release exceptional CO2 into the atmosphere.
Maybe not, because I don't believe those scientists, but the jury's still out.
Right, and science is just like religion, and it goes away if you don't believe in it. Just like Zoroastrianism or the worshipful cult of the dear one flayed Xipe Totec.
Think of it as Casper. Every once in a while you see it, then it goes away. It just goes away.
Climate change is just like Tinkerbell. If we don't clap, climate change will die.
Exactly. Don't clap climate change. Exactly. All you liberals, all you progressives out there.
Democrats.
Democrats, thank you, Bob. That other libby-tard word that I might get in trouble for saying, but frowny face. My guy gets a little pissy when I say that, but we'll never mind that, because we're in a just cause here for oil. All you folks out there who are very upset, you need to just get over it, because this is American jobs here, folks. We got too many people. That king up in the White House, that Kenyan
Kenyan Messiah.
Yes, he does not understand what is going on. Alan Keyes, he knew what was what. He put his long form birth certificate up in there in the ether, so you knew that he was an asshole. All right, just like any other asshole. But that king, he wanted to do a little tricky dicky, you know. And the only one who should be able to do that, he's dead. So, we got problems there, but I'm sure Jesus can fix that. Either way, I'm praying for the oil, and it will rise up just like Christ.
Thomas.
See what I did there?
Thomas.
Yes?
Honey, Thomas.
Yes?
What are you smoking tonight?
I'm on happiness.
You're totally fucking wasted on happiness, apparently.
No, actually, I have...
Approaching happiness toxicity.
Today is 6 days away from my 39th birthday.
And there's a reason to drink. And I never drink without a reason. Sun's up, mail's in, somebody's birthday somewhere.
I'm not quite sure I'm handling it very well, Bob.
You're turning into a neurotic mess over your 39th birthday?
Wait till my 40th, Bob.
Oh, sugar. No, 50. Because there's something kind of special about 50. Because you can kind of go 49 and 49, that's 98. I mean, there's some 98-year-old people. You hit 50 and you're like, no, I'm definitely past halfway.
That is true. And 60, you're just fucked.
Well, let's not say that.
Well, you could be with enough Viagra.
You got a little case of the sniffles there. Have you been into Uncle Donald's Coke box?
No. I have allergies. I have hay fever. I there's nothing wrong with me. I haven't moved.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I got it. You're getting the case of the old Peruvian hay fever. Right, yeah.
haven't been watching too much of that House of Cards English version, which is still better than the American version. Sorry, all you Yanks. I'm going to give you a little spoiler. I mean, the thing was in the 90s. But when a dude kills another dude with rat poison, you know it's good. Okay?
Yeah, well.
Come on.
That is good.
Who doesn't like death by rat poison? I know, spoiler alert, but it's from the 90s. It's like giving away Matlock.
Or Murder, She Wrote.
Thank you. Or the A-Team.
Well, no, really. Okay, now, the ultimate giveaway of Murder, She Wrote. Let's get this clear.
She did it
Jessica
all?
Fletcher was the most successful serial killer in the history of American television. She committed all of those murders. The only thing that all of those murders had in common was the presence of Jessica Fletcher, Angela Lansbury. Think about
Thank
it.
Thank you. Totally. And the guy that was the cut.
I mean, she pulls into the driveway and the guy sitting in the wing back Chippendale goes, oh, fuck, Jessica's here. Somebody's going to die.
It's like the red shirt showing up on Star Trek, obligatory Star Trek reference.
He's dead, Jim.
He's dead, Jim. He's dead, Jessica. Yeah, I know, I did it. It's in the script.
Did you bastards never see the Manchurian Candidate? I'm evil!
Talk about the devil. We don't need Hillary. We got Jessica.
I mean, I remember my dad sitting there watching it in reruns going, Dad, you know who did it? He goes, yeah, but I just like Jessica. I said, God damn, Dad, this is Stockholm Syndrome.
Well, she was.
But then again, my dad, furnace operator that he was, he had an analytical mind. And he could watch reruns of Perry Mason till hell froze over.
Oh, I'm the same way with Columbo, man. My girlfriend, who's not feeling well, and we were playing Words with Friends, and where she always kicks my ass because I don't know any words. And so as she was kicking my ass, typically my modus operandi when I'm not listening to FYNation.com, shameless plug, when I'm not doing that, I'm watching Columbo on Netflix over and over and over and over.
You know,
and
you,
over.
If and the only reason to watch Columbo is because of Peter Falk.
Oh yes.
So please, yes. Please tell me that you are the proud owner of the In-Laws 1978.
Unfortunately, I'm not. But if anybody wants to get that for me for my birthday, I am totally game.
Did you say you're totally gay?
Well, half.
Okay.
But
that doesn't
am,
have anything to do with receiving the in-laws for your birthday.
No, I'm totally game for that.
You have seen it, haven't you, Thomas?
No, I haven't, but I've heard it's very good.
Oh, it's the it is the most underappreciated, underrated comedy of the second half of the 20th century, and yes, that includes Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks's films are just obviously funny. The in-laws is, it's insane.
Yeah.
You know, Mel Brooks is madcap. Mel Brooks is over the top. I mean, you've got when you've got a Jewish Indian in the middle of the Nevada desert, you know, you're dealing with the outrageous.
Yeah.
The in-laws is entirely plausible. And then these little moments of absolute madness just creep into it. I wish there was some way that I could. I envy you. I envy you, Thomas, because I would like to be in the same room with you the first time you watch The In-Laws.
Well, you know,
you're
what?
Gonna be a mess.
Maybe you know, I have one of those newfangled computer things, and I have a webcam that the NSA monitors me on. They're doing it right now.
Yeah.
Hi, NSA Minder. Even though it's not on. So
that's Agent Fred. P-H-R-E-D.
Yes. So what I could do for you, Bob, is if somebody either I find it on Netflix or Hulu, because we have Hulu too, I will record maybe the first 5 or 10 minutes of me watching it and then send it to you.
We're gonna need more than 10 minutes.
Okay. A half hour?
I don't know. Maybe we could hook up the webcam and I could just watch. No, that just sounds creepy. That sounds Trumpy. I would watch you watch it.
That's like you're volunteering to be my NSA monitor is what you're.
Well, kinda, you know.
I already have one. Ironically enough, his name is Bob, but maybe that's interchangeable. It's kind of like
but when you do, just let me know. I'll know. I'll know.
Okay.
You'll call and you'll go, oh, my God, I can't believe I'd never seen that.
Okay.
And you just have to make sure you don't get the shitty version with Michael Douglas and Albert Brooks, because that thing just sucks air.
Okay.
You want the original. Peter Falk, Alan Arkin, Ed Begley Jr. You got
fair enough.
I mean, let's see. I keep clips around here of the in-laws.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Phone.
I mean, and it doesn't even, well, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it to you. It just, no.
Yeah, don't do it to me. But my favorite, you know Columbo.
Oh, Jesus, pigs. Yeah.
Okay, what is your favorite Columbo of the original, not the 90s series, but the original series that what would be your favorite original Columbo?
I
have two, but what are your? Unfortunately, I don't know the name.
I don't either, but the one with Ted Cassidy.
Okay, give me a description, and I'll tell you.
All I can see is Ted Cassidy, and he's because he's such a dick to Columbo. He's so superior. He's oh, and you know, perfectly coiffed, and so filled with ennui at this whole murder business. Look at it. No, that's it. Look it up. Watch it. Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Okay. And then I'll find them, because I know that there are a couple. I think there is one that is with a kid that It's the 70s, so spoiler alert. I don't know why I'm bothering. It's like trigger warning. The kid kills his uncle in the limousine.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite ones. The one on the Pacific Princess is my second favorite one. I can't remember what the name of it is. I can never remember the name of any Columbo episode, but that's my second favorite Columbo episode. And then my third and final favorite Columbo episode, well, I have more than that, but my top three, to round out the top three, is the one where the old lady kills the nephew because she thinks the nephew kills his wife. And at the end of the episode, she says something to Columbo to the point of, if only you were around to investigate her murder, you would have solved it.
Nice.
It was heartbreaking, but yet total satisfaction, because she, the whole time, from the moment, especially in this episode, from the moment he entered the scene, you knew he knew she did it, right? She knew. And they kept playing this cat and mouse game of this older, like, at one point they were like, shall we trade poverty stories, Lieutenant? Because they were driving in the Rolls, he got to drive her Rolls Royce. You know what I mean? And it's just the whole thing, and everybody around them knows that she killed him. So it's not like this big secret. The secret reveal was how Columbo would catch her. And it's a beautiful... Catch Me If You Can is the name of the episode. And I highly... If you never watched a Columbo episode...
Okay, I'm going to go check that out after the program this evening.
Make this the episode that you watch, because this episode is just so beautifully done.
I think I think it's so fun hearing millennials wax rhapsodic over 70s television.
I hated Columbo when I was a kid. My grandfather loved it, and I hated it. But when I got a little older and I saw how police were
it's also counterintuitive, because there's never any doubt who done it. The fun is in watching Columbo, you know, how do you feel about McMillan and wife?
Yeah. I've never seen it.
Okay, so once upon a time there was this stuff called broadcast television.
Yeah, but yes.
And there were only three channels, maybe four if you count PBS.
I've heard of the 80s, and then the Bundys came along and ruined everything.
But so one week you'd get a Columbo.
Uh-huh.
And the next week you'd get a McMillan and wife.
Oh, I've heard.
And the week after that you would get a Dennis Weaver. He was a cop from Taos, New Mexico, who had been seconded to the New York City Police Department.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you'd get one of those.
Okay.
Yeah, NBC Mystery Theater was what it was called.
Okay, that I knew about. I listened to a, let me get the name of it, because I recommend these guys for you, and anybody who likes podcasts. I'm going to actually be trying to interview them soon. I they said yes, we're just trying to work out a date. But they have, on iTunes, Just One More Thing Columbo podcast.
My God, there's a podcast for Columbo?
Yes. They go through each Columbo, all of them, 80s, 90s, and 70s Columbo.
And by the way, the Dennis Weaver piece was McLeod.
Okay, fair enough. They go through all of them, and they do it in such a way that it's fast. It's like watching a Columbo episode. I cannot wait to talk to them, because we're going to talk about – because if you notice about Columbo, Columbo never goes over after anybody who is poor. Every person who he ever goes after has money.
By the way, yes, I'm told the name of it was Negative Reaction.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke.
Yep.
That's Marty's favorite episode.
By the way, Chekhov was in one episode. William Shatner was in a 90s and a 70s episode. And Leonard Nimoy was in a 70s episode, for all you Star Trek fans, just so you're aware.
Oh, they showed up lots of places. Yeah.
Yeah. Chekhov in the, it was funny, in the 70s episode where William Shatner plays Detective Lucerne, like a fake police cop. It's so funny because Chekhov plays a real cop helping Columbo. So that's just weird. I don't know who had that joke in there, but that was
beautiful. Well, remember, it was an NBC property, so.
Yeah, that was beautiful. And Columbo in the Leonard Nimoy episode gets visibly angry, like really angry at Leonard Nimoy. Like he blows his stack at him. And I don't remember the name of the episode, but I know it's all on Netflix, and it's very worth it.
By the way, our buddy David in South Carolina mentions Bob Dylan being awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature today is fairly newsworthy.
Yeah, true.
Of course, that's taking you back to like when your parents were children. I mean,
right. I just wanted to call in and break up the monotony of the Trump and
I'm so glad to know I was monotonous. I love you too.
No, I mean of the election, not you. You're never monotonous. I missed you. We replayed the man who my favorite Tom. I love Tom Harmon, but he has an asterisk because he calls Phyllis
Lafley a national treasure.
National treasure. So he has that little asterisk next to him. So we replayed him while you were gone yesterday. So I missed you. And I needed to call in to my friend Bob to you know, I finished up show prep. I got all my stuff in. I'm just doing some final touch ups with our network and our website. And the other announcement I wanted to make was, if you're having trouble getting to FYNation.com, it's not you, it's me. We had to change to a new server, and the SSL certificate that we had to secure the server had to be taken off. So some of you may have some time. A little bit of problems getting there, but you can find us on TuneIn under FYNation.com. So that's the other way that you could do that, just in case, because we are here and we haven't gone anywhere. But I do thank you, and also remind people that $17.76, $10 of that is still on the table for you, Bob. So anybody True. Who goes to our Patreon at FYNation. Patreon.com/FYNation will get $10 as long as they let me know via email at doubtingtom@FYNation.com and send me some hate mail, Jill Sinai supporters. You've been awfully quiet, so maybe you like me. I don't know why. Do send me some hate mail. It's my birthday. I need to lift my spirits up.
Birthday hate mail.
What's that?
Birthday hate mail. One of these days we're gonna have time to just sort of drag the couch out, and we'll get through all this, Thomas. You know,
we will. But I want to thank you again for everything you do. And our way to do that is $10 every time we get a $17.76 donation for our email address to get for people lifetime email, no advertising and no spam, and totally secure. So I just wanted to throw that out for you. Okay, Bob?
All right. I appreciate it.
and I will get off here and watch that Columbus. Try and catch me or catch me if you can, but I think that's a Leonardo DiCaprio movie, which is pretty good too. But,
okay, and by all means, stay out of the Peruvian hay fever for a while, okay?
Oh, it's really bad down here, Bob. We got it. We have it so bad. Oh man, Bob, you had to bring it up, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, try a little saline and a little baking soda on the gums, and you'll be groovy.
Like I don't do. I don't do enough weird stuff naturally. You have to make it worse.
Thomas, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. And onward and over to the stress line where Jim awaits from Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob? I got to ask you a question. Have you dropped any Tom Hartman acid lately or something? Or?
No. My life is weird enough, Jim. I really can't cut. I'm afraid if I dropped acid, I might get all normal.
No, I just, and I understand about back in Hillary and all that, and I'm still voting Stein.
That's cool by me. I mean, it's a protest vote. I get that.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter because, I mean, Trump's going to win Louisiana, Stan, even with the crap that's come out. I mean, in fact, I was talking with somebody, and the crap that came out, and she was a woman, that doesn't even matter. In fact, they just think that that's just trumped up. But on top of that, the weird thing about that is, that's not the only time he's played that crap. I mean, that's his modus operandi.
He's a psychopath, okay?
Right.
I mean, I think if you go back far enough, you'll probably find he was doing this shit at that skeevy, 14. Expensive military school in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, I mean, a psychopath's going to psychopath. Think about George W. Bush branding people with fucking white hot coat hangers in his fraternity at Yale, and none other than Gary Trudeau dropped the dime on that.
Yeah, I mean that's just the way it is. I mean, the weird thing is, maybe it's because I've got a couple years on you, not much, 3 or 4 or whatever, but. I just don't see any way that this country getting out of it, I mean, we had a chance with Bernie, and, the powers that be weren't going to let it. And I kind of figured that, but I got so caught up in the hope, we could do that, and this country could do that, But, just being a realist thing sometimes is kind of tough,
Yeah, it is. I mean...
Deal with it every day with living in West Virginia, as do I, Louisiana. It's just like,
well, I mean, where I am, Jim, it's not that they're just poo-pooing, these allegations of sexual assault. Candidates here are running toward Trump. Okay, they're not running away from him. The Republican nominee for governor said, "Well, I find that pretty disgusting, but I'm still voting for him." And then they had a goddamn debate a few days ago, and they got and the Republican and the Democrat in the governor's debate here in West Virginia got into a pissing match over who was better friends with Trump. I shit you not.
Well, it's just like the few local commercials I've seen around here. I think it's for Senator. But it's just like right wing fascist time for whatever Senate seat that's open. Maybe there's, I don't know. Yeah, I guess because there's only one at a time. That's how they fix it. But in Louisiana, it's so damn conservative. Even though it's against their own, most of the people's self-interest, which, I mean, I'm getting to the point I don't even care anymore. And I'm getting to the point about climate change and all that. Fuck it. Let's just fuck up the planet as fast as we fucking can. And, let's go. Let's have a good time and let the rich, be rich. And the funny thing is, unless they develop a plan, and I don't see how they could do that, to live somewhere else where the untouchables, i.e. the rest of the 99%, can live minus whatever percent they want to have do the drudgery labor. I don't get it. Plus, another thing real quick. The planet's population's getting up there, food and stuff, and Monsanto, I think, is going to have a crash, the whole Monsanto thing, but kind of all over the place.
Well, no, I get what you're saying, Jim, but I can't go with the burn baby burn outlook. I can't, because if
you got a child, and a grandchild, you got children.
Well, not just that, but I mean the thing is, climate change's impacts are visited disproportionately on the poorest people on Earth. People that would make anybody in the United States look rich by comparison. There's 40 dead from Hurricane Matthew in the United States. There's near 1,000 or more dead in Haiti. And
right.
That hurricane, there are aspects of climate change tucked away in that monster hurricane that formed further south in than any other in the Caribbean Basin than any other hurricane in history.
Now that I've noticed these hurricanes coming up in October, being from Louisiana, Stan, growing up with hurricanes, I remember late September was the latest you'd have a hurricane. No, this October shit,
Oh, sooner or later, I think we already have. We've already had November hurricanes, right?
Yeah. Well, there was that hurricane that went up and hit, and it hit New Jersey, your favorite governor, your buddy Christie. You're pals with him, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, we talk all the time.
Buddy Chris Christie. And it made that weird turn when it hit right in there. And then he was crying like a little bitch, and Obama was magnanimous. I like Obama on some levels, but I mean, you don't get to be president without being a corporate deal maker.
Let's deal with that. Abraham Lincoln didn't get to be president without making deals either.
Who's that?
Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln didn't get to be president without making deals.
I know that.
Neither did Andrew Jackson. Not exactly a good example, but George Washington was a consensus agreement for first president, and that itself was a deal. And every one of these things that I've referenced are deals made among the powerful and the wealthy. For us to pretend that this country has ever been about anything else is to deny reality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's become blatantly apparent to me, from day one. And that's just the way the world works. I mean, sometimes I used to think, if we could just have this perfect utopian groove scene, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well, I mean, go back to 1913, Jim. Read An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution by Charles Beard. Okay,
right.
If you read that, and here's the interesting thing about An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution. Right-wingers and capitalists and free marketeers and whatnot, think tankers have all attacked, from the moment that he published it in 1913, they have attacked Charles Beard. Wow, goddamn, he's a Marxist. Oh, my God, he doesn't believe in little baby Jesus. Oh, he's a son of a bitch. Oh, he talked bad to his mother one time. They attacked him, and they attacked him because there's really no way to credibly attack his thesis. His thesis is essentially that the Constitution was written by rich people to benefit rich people.
Well, you know what's weird about that? I'm 3 for 3 on that. I'm a critique. But Yeah, you know, so I'm still just going to go ahead and vote Jill Stein. You know, my protest vote in Louisiana stand. And I hate to tell you this. I think you're probably aware of this. Hillary's not going to be that much better.
Than Trump?
I don't think so.
By what? Wait. I mean, by what metric, though, Jim? Trump wants to build camps and wants to put 11.5 million people in camps. Hillary Clinton does not want to put 11.5 million people in camps.
Not yet. I don't know.
Trump wants to build a wall, and she doesn't. Trump doesn't acknowledge climate change as being real. Hillary does.
I don't think it even matters now. I think we've already passed the point. They say and scientists say, well, we're getting close to it. I think I'm saying let's go full blast. Let's go nuclear. Let's go burn coal and provide, not that many jobs because coal is so automated now, right?
But think about the people you're condemning to a premature and particularly nasty death, Jim.
I'm just in a cohorted mood, Bob.
I understand that. I get that.
It's like the line from the song. I don't care anymore. I've tried caring, and nobody in the rest of society doesn't seem to give a fuck. So fuck it. You know, and also I just want to throw in a song that's talking about old TV shows and stuff. This isn't as old. I'm kind of a Law and Order junkie. I don't know if you've ever watched that.
Oh, yeah. Every time. Well, I mean, I don't, not anymore, cable cutter. But, you know, back when my dad was alive, 2 o'clock every afternoon, dum dum. And you got to sit down and watch because it's fun, you know, because it was very well made television.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've been like the old. I mean, it's so. I mean, the original.
And you know, the poor Ben Stone era. That poor son of a gun couldn't win a jaywalking case, and it was frustrating.
Wait, who was that? Couldn't win a jaywalking case?
Ben Stone.
Oh.
The little nerdy prosecutor.
Oh, yeah. But The first one with who was the guy, Sam Waterston, he was smart to hook onto that. That was a smart move career-wise because he did about 15, 18 years on that. I mean, in Hollywood, that is
that's a nice ride.
Thank you.
And then he got himself a gig hustling for some Wall Street firm.
Well, of course, coming from Law and Order, he's going to be nothing but straight up, you know. But that's my little 2 cents there.
Well, and bear in mind, I mean, you're not alone by any stretch of the imagination. Down in Shreveport, Jack writes, my U.S. House district has 5 Republicans running, all of which endorse Trump. Of course they do. I'll try to figure out if there's one that will cause the least damage. That happens a lot on ballots I vote on. Multiple Republican candidates and no Democrats.
Well, I'm essentially a Green Party candidate.
there's no Green Party candidate either.
I know that. I mean, it's the whole thing. I mean, you said that. I've been listening to you for 2.5-3 years.
Longer than that.
You kind of admit. Has it been that long? Probably. I mean, Bob Dylan would say, how time fades away since he won that award the other day.
Today, yeah.
But, It just seems that the more I guess I'm kind of for a moment lost with words, but now that totally frustrated. I'm still going green. Don't give a fuck. And I'm almost hoping for the end. I'm just saying it, and maybe I'm voicing a hidden thought for everybody. I'm sorry for everybody and their kids, but I don't see any way out. It's just like I've already heard, with the scientists were talking, and I'm kind of backing over. Well, they say, we're not quite there yet. I think that's kind of give us some.
Well, have you seen the recently released the George Carlin bit?
Which I think I have, but which
I mean,
one?
It's the one he himself blocked its release. It was an HBO special that he taped on September 10th, 2001. And in it, he says things like, "I love a good disaster. The more people get killed, the better." And he goes through this long litany of people who need to die. And he got up the next morning, and the Twin Towers were coming down. And, well, by his own request, they just decided, you know, no, we're not going to air this. And then he got released, what, 2 months, month and a half back, something like that. And so, you know, you're not alone. It's a sort of a dark place that a lot of us don't like to go. But look, there's a reason that in the for-profit media at the news level, whether it be national or local, the old rule of thumb obtains: if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, well,
and you go to NASCAR races to watch the wrecks. I don't care what anybody says.
We have
a nasty little voyeuristic ugly streak. We just do.
Well, but yet nothing about coal mining is going to make the news very much in your neck of the woods, or what oil drilling is doing, and why we shouldn't be focusing on solar energy, which the rest of the world seems to be progressing right along.
And there's Hillary Clinton saying that she wants 500,000 solar panels on roofs by the end of her first term.
I'm still not voting for it.
Ah, I know, but I mean, she's saying that that ain't we're going to the moon by 1970, but for this era, it kind of is.
Yeah. No, and I predict she will win. In fact, I think the fix is already in. I think the whole election thing is bullshit. I think it's fixed. That I just wrote my little Garrison conspiracy sausage. You know, after 2004. Nah, they don't lift this shit up for a chance.
So, but I mean, I think we have an it's just a philosophical difference, Jim. I think we've got an obligation to continue to try to avert disaster. I am a straight up humanist. I love the human species. I love life. Anybody who says that there's anything else but this needs to go get fucked.
And as such,
I want other people, future generations, to get a chance to be what Kurt Vonnegut called sitting up mud.
You talking about an afterlife, Bobby? You know, I'm a staunch atheist, brother.
Right, I know. So, sure. You know, this is what you get, and so we cherish it, and we value it, and we revel in it, and no matter how awful it seems, hey, you got to be here. You got to the show.
Okay. Well, I'm here, and I'll see what happens, you know. Go Jill Stein. I know how much you love hearing
her. we're buddies. I don't care. I mean,
dude, I probably just swayed 100,000 voters.
I know you did. You just pushed her over that magic 5% mark, dude.
Yeah. I don't know. I've kind of reached a point where I don't even think I'm going to vote the main party ever again. That's how fucking pissed off I am.
Hey, you know what? Maybe there'll be a candidate that comes along. Come on, Jim. If Bernie had been the nominee, you would have been out there stumping for him.
There was no way that was going to happen, brother. I understand what you're saying, but
I don't know. I think there's an alternate. I think there's an alternate universe where he wins.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're not there, and until I'm there, it's a moot point. You know, it's fantasy. Yeah. So, all right, I'm going to let somebody else get in.
All right, we'll see you, Jim. You take care. Bye now. Calling from Louisiana, Stan. That's our buddy Jim. I guess I need to stop telling people how to vote. Of course, if I was telling people to vote for Jill Stein, I wouldn't get anything saying stop telling people how to vote. Right on, Bob! Meanwhile, a note coming from Michael in Madison. Subject line, hate mail for Thomas. Stop telling us how to watch Columbo! Yeah, I love Michael. So, by the way, this is a... both lines are open, if you want to jump in. I saw Todd try to call in a little bit ago. It's open if you want to join in. This is an unpaid product endorsement. And, by the way, we are... Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much. We are down to $155 to go tonight. $155 for fundraising for the evening. And I welcome any and all. We all do. That's how we keep this on the air. Lots of bills remaining to be paid. Paid a big one today. Also wasted no small amount of, well, I had some more of my life stolen from me by the fine folks at Frontier Tech Support. You know, well, but we're going to get that damn thing sorted out yet. Quick, before I go back to the phones. This is an unpaid product endorsement. I can't afford the stuff, but I love Patagonia products. They are made with as little environmental impact as possible. They're really neat from a fashion standpoint. I mean, they make ultra lightweight t-shirt hoodies that will even keep me from getting burned in hot summer sun. And I don't have to put any chemicals on my skin. Their winter gear is warmer than warm. And from a corporate standpoint, their heart and soul is definitely in the right place. Yvon Chouinard founded Patagonia in 1973. They try to do as little harm to the environment and with their products as possible. They've got retail locations in larger cities. Around here in the tourism area, you see a lot of people wearing Patagonia year-round, but more in the winter. And they are absolutely determined to have an impact, especially among millennials, on politics. You know, these are not the skeevy corporate types who talk about being green and then give lots of money to Republican candidates. Among other things, Patagonia has been a supporter of Coal River Mountain Watch's work for a long time. And I thank them and I deeply respect them for it. This year, at every one of its stores throughout the country, they're hosting two separate political events. One happened on September 27th, National Voter Registration Day. Another has been designed to focus on local politics, because all politics is local. And they focus on a particular issue important to the region. I mean, if we had a Patagonia store in West Virginia, for instance, maybe it would be about mountaintop removal or fracking. In the Washington, D.C. event, they focused on the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. That's a 600-mile proposed pipeline to carry natural gas from the fracking fields of West Virginia to to gas-fired power plants in Virginia and North Carolina. Quit telling people how to stay warm in winter, Bob. But seriously, if you're in the market for a high quality, good winter coat with winter coming, Patagonia. If you need gear to keep you dry in the rain, Patagonia. Their fleeces, their hoodies are just awesome. Patagonia. Patagonia.com. This is a company that's getting it right politically, and I would dare suggest that they deserve our support. It'd be kind of cool if they advertised with the horn, you know, but because I could really stand to say, hey, have you bought your Patagonia today? But they don't, and that's a freebie. And maybe someday I'll, you know, get some Patagonia. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Good evening, man. I'm sorry to hear about your son and that ordeal. That did not sound very positive.
He's home. He's healing. He's recovering. I'm happy.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I just hope everything returns like it needs to be with his hand.
Don't let the neighbors know that he has any strong meds, huh?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's the only thing I was.
At least the woman who stole his hydrocodone syrup when he was a little boy and had his tonsils out has since moved on.
Ugh. Yuck. I had no idea you were going to mention Patagonia, but yeah, you're on the money. I didn't even think you were going to bring that up, obviously. But yeah, I think that they were, if I remember right. Like, I remember a kid I used to hang with. And they had a freestanding store in New York City in the 80s. And I think that fleece, they were the first ones making fleece out of the recycled soda bottle. But then.
The fleeces are amazing. And they've got the typical fleecy fleece, and then they've got the fuzzy fleece, and that stuff's wild. It's
like down, but it's like you see, it's good for backpacking because you can like throw it, you know, roll it up and put it in your bag.
This is a world that eats a lot of chicken, so there's going to be a lot of down. but they're even particular about where their down comes from.
Well, you have to reinforce the good where it works.
And the colors, my God, they got some of the most vibrant, cool colors. Yeah.
I wonder if they're one of those B corporations.
I don't know. They've been around a lot longer than B corporations have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing not. But, you know, and they make a lot of their stuff around the world globally. But they make determined efforts to make sure that the people making their stuff are humanely treated in the factories and have living wages.
Well, they definitely. I never had one, but I know people who had before this stuff got popular, like Columbia, North Face, and Patagonia. Obviously, the latter two, they got popular, but the Patagonia, they've always made nice quality things.
Yeah, we got a lot of people who do a lot of rock climbing around here, and their outdoor gear for that, like their Nano Airline, is just amazing because it's not bulky, and yet it's earth friendly, and you cannot get cold in it.
Was that the one belay stuff?
They call it Nano Air.
Oh. The rope, I mean, that you tie around?
Oh, and then some people free climb.
Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot of, pitons and hammers and stuff like that.
So, I was listening earlier, and it's a shame, Thomas seems like he's in the mood to see the in-laws. That is such an underrated movie. You know, you bring it out, it's amazing. How come that never really caught on?
Sheldon,
this is just be a minute, Sheldon. Motherfucker ends up in South America. It's just be a minute.
And, no spoilers, no spoilers, Todd, no spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
Dear Vince, at least we tried. What does that mean? Bay of Pigs. It refers to the Bay of Pigs.
You were in the Bay of Pigs?
In on it. It's my idea.
God. See, that Soylent Green, the in-laws, 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know, there's a few movies that are really, really worth owning and watching twice a year.
Oh, I think we should let you curate the Horn Film Festival, Todd.
I'll try. I'm really picky about the movies because, you know, it's amazing. They spend a lot of money, you know, producers spend a lot of money on movies and they end up being nothing. And a movie like The In-Laws, like, I probably did not cost that much to make. I don't know what it cost to make. But then, you know, it's funny, like you said, 1978, you know, and I'm not going to mention that area of the world again, but, look, you know, it was so apropos. You know, you look back historically, you know, think about what happened in 1981, you know, just a few years later. That was kind of interesting. I started cracking up. It made me smile when I started thinking about that because I never, ever. Because the first time you see it, it just takes these turns. And it's like, what? No, that's not going to happen. And, well, he has good taste, because then he was talking about Columbo, and that never gets old.
Well, it's not, I mean, it's 1978, and one of the early lines is, oh, Jesus, Arabs! Yeah, because we were just kind of getting past the oil embargoes, and, yeah. We're the U.S. Treasury, for Christ's sakes!
All right.
They're just lines. We're not spoiling. They're just lines.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either. That was crazy.
And if you can keep a straight face through the dinner scene, you're a fucking Vulcan.
Oh my God! And it was like this is a normal dinner. It wasn't even like it was a movie. It was just like, oh, that could be any family at dinner. Really, I mean. Normal dinner in the suburbs. You know. Sheldon, I just have to go in the kitchen for a minute. I just have to talk.
This tooth chewed on a third cousin to Sophie Tucker. When I was poor, this tooth had only beans.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to find
The script is... I've sat with dear friends and watched this. There is not a wasted line in the entire film. Every line, every utterance has value.
Serpentine.
Yeah, see? now you want okay, here's a funny. Did you ever see the I guess it was an HBO miniseries, Generation Kill?
I did not.
Okay, it's worth it. It's really good. It's about a Marine recon unit involved in the invasion of Iraq in, you know, 2003. Really good cast. And if you read the comments and stuff, Marines who were in on it, you know, can't resist commenting, yep, that's how it was.
Wow.
And so it comes from a book written by an embedded Rolling Stone journalist in Generation Kill. And there's a scene where they're running, they're in a city and they're running, and the Marines run from point A to point B, and then the journalist, you know, he's got his Kevlar vest and his helmet and everything, and he runs too, only he serpentines.
Mm.
And he gets where he's going, and there's shots going off all around him, and the Marine sergeant looks at him and says, what the fuck was that? And the guy looks at him and says, serpentine.
You're not going to make a segue to the movie, are you really?
No, I mean, there's no spoiler here. But then he references the in-laws, and the young sergeant has never seen the movie, he's never heard of it, and he goes, well, don't do that anymore, it'll get you killed.
Oh God, I just don't understand that. See that the in-laws should be in every household because it's something that you can watch with your family if you have kids. You know, like a Thanksgiving, like after dinner, you know, and you're getting kind of groggy or whatever, and you're ready to laugh. It's God, what an excellent movie. What was that movie with Shelley? Oh, I'm having a brain fart. Who's crazy? Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson, anyway, Texas. The daughter gets cancer. And it's like a love story that's sad. I think it's another classic movie. God, why can't I remember? Come on, help me. Let's see.
You're not giving me enough to work with here, Todd.
Okay, all right. So there's a mother and a daughter, and they're not getting along, and it turns out the daughter has cancer. And the daughter's not even 30, I don't think. She's probably, if she is 30, she's just barely 30.
Is this the Jack Nicholson vehicle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Terms of Endearment.
That's
a good movie, I think. That's classic. But anyway, I just had to call in about the in-laws because you hit the nail on the head. You know, we were probably around the same age. That was like Friday night. You know, Sanford and Son would come on, then the Friday Night Mysteries. Like you said, the Millen and Wife, and you know, and they would switch it up every other week. Now those are some pretty good shows. It was just good TV. It was pretty good for TV.
Yeah,
I put it like that. You know, and then we had the Rockford Files. It never got old.
Oh, no. My dad was a big Rockford Files fan, but you know who was an even bigger Rockford Files fan? Hmm. My granny, his mother.
Get out.
Oh, she was a fan. Of course, I think she kind of dug James Garner because my grandfather, back before he died in 1968, had been a huge fan of James Garner in Maverick.
The Palace?
Maverick. Yeah, Richard Boone
was
Paladin.
A good-looking guy, you know? And, you know, when they interviewed...
Good liberal, too. Good liberal.
That's what I was going to say. I had no idea until I got to be an adult that he was down with the movement. Frank Sinatra was down with the movement. You know, some people you never would think. But, you know, we've got to find common ground.
One of my favorite down with the movement guys was Eddie Albert.
I never knew that.
Mr. Douglas. Yeah.
Oliver
Wendell Douglas from Green Acres.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, he was the one who said, "Yeah, I was a member of the Communist Party in Hollywood," and Ronald Reagan tried to join, and we all knew he was an asshole, so we wouldn't let him, and that's why he hates communists to this day.
I never knew that. See, people, you can always count on Bob to learn something. It can be the classics. It can be how to use the King's English in a proper manner. It can be so many things. Well, anyway, I just wanted to touch base and talk about, I just wanted to mention, I'm glad you know about B Corporations because I think folks need to wake up a little bit about that. I mean, you know, we have to spend money with corporations.
Well, you know, the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan, has talked a little bit about that in conversation from time to time, and we probably need to revisit it. They're not universally accepted. I mean, some states, but not all.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, beneficial corporations. It's a different, you know, they're chartered in such a way that their first goal is not profit above all things. That's my understanding of what sets them apart.
Absolutely. They're not against me. They make profit, but it's a fair profit. So it's spread out. They treat their workers well. Because this unfettered capitalism, honestly, you look at it now, the way we look at capitalism, the way it's transpiring, there's not that many places left to colonize. And that was basically, capitalism was based on colonization, in a way. And, I mean, the way that's how we actually it. Because if you got no raw materials, if you got no place that you can go to that doesn't have shit, we can just go in and take over. You know, the capitalistic model is not really going to work. You know, that's why what's presenting the mono economy, and then, you know, you got the coal culture.
Yeah, exactly.
and you start eating yourself. So now we're being eaten. Because, oh, that's what I wanted to say. You see, you remember this. I know you remember this. This is starting to piss me off. You remember when Reagan came in and he started to bust the unions and say, look, folks, we have to, these unions are eating us alive. We have to dissolve the unions and we have to work harder and they'll be, you know, there'll be fruit at the end, but we have to work together. So even just a little bit prior to that, now the wages have gone down. If you prorate the wages, right? Everything, we never caught up. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
No, we haven't. You know, no, and the war has been on ever since, and we're losing.
And we're losing. So, you know, so whenever you're talking to some friends who may not see things the way you do, remind them of that. Because I think I brought up Stockman or Stockton, you know, the last time we talked.
David Stockman, yeah.
And I forgot to say that the reason I brought him up is that he was one of the architects. He was the cheerleader for that. And he came out, you know, just a few years ago and said, yeah, it really didn't work. It was a bad idea. So that's pretty much all you need to know about that nonsense. And so
is everything getting anything? I mean, I'm reading the stories about the aftermath of Matthew, and especially in North Carolina. Dear God.
It's ugly.
Overflowing hog manure lagoons.
The Tar River, it has affected us, yeah. But see, it's not as bad as North Carolina, obviously, but everything's coming downhill, and we're downhill. But yes, these rivers are still, they haven't crested quite yet. They say maybe the 16th or the 18th. So it's not good, and the weather's, you know, we're not in cold weather yet. It's nice and cool at night. So think about all these insects, the Zika mosquitoes and other insects, and, you know, they're like flying hypodermic needles with no alcohol swabs. So, you know, there's that to deal with. But it's a mess. It is a real mess, and it just seems like it gets worse every year. And you know what's the sad part? What was that Dutch guy he used to work for, NOAA? They fired him because he was like, oh, this is what's going to happen. We need to get with the Army Corps of Engineers, and we have to redo this and redo that. And they got rid of him. Because, I mean, I've been following this stuff. This is exactly what was predicted. Superstorms. Now, I think Bermuda's about to get hit. You know, Category 5, because the Matthew swung back around. You know, but hey, you know, and we can get a hurricane. I heard you guys talking about hurricanes earlier. You know, any time of the year now, we can get a hurricane. You know, they were calling it a nor'easter, but that was a hurricane that went up through the northeast. But I'll let somebody get on, and everybody check out the inbox if you can. I don't want to say it's forgotten.
Well, we've already got Brother Deacon Asa is already on it. He's going to either rent it or buy it. If you rent it once, and you can, I know you can rent it through Amazon.com. If you rent it once, you'll probably wind up buying it. So just buy it.
It's,
I mean, if your appreciation of comedy is anything resembling mine, you'll watch it again and again and again and again. You know, there's tremendous red tape in the bush, Sheldon.
In the what?
In the bush. Tremendous red tape in the bush.
Yeah, in the bush. Well, hope you guys have a good evening, and take care of your son.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Todd. Thank you very kindly. And okay. I will pass on your good wishes.
All right.
See you, Todd. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. that movie. Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, I'll probably watch that tonight, too. Because, you know, who can't use a laugh? Oh, what else? You know, we didn't get a chance to have prayer meeting Wednesday. Because, call coming in. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Nikki Goldenheart. How are you?
Hey, Nikki, how are you?
I'm doing okay. And I wanted to call in because you guys were talking a little bit about some climate change stuff, and wanted to mention that the Great Barrier Reef has now been pronounced dead.
Like, really, really most assuredly, you know, like, Munchkin Land, you know, dead?
It seems like it. There's a story from outside online that's saying that it was 25 million years old and that they have pretty much, you know, marked it as it was now dead. And, you know, thinking about overflowing hog waste going into the water just reminded me of that a little bit more, you know. And, you know, people should know that when the reefs are dead, the oceans die, and we're going to die. So it might be a little too late now.
Let's see. April 21st, 2016, Huffington Post. 93% of the Great Barrier Reef is practically dead.
Yeah.
Since you've mentioned it, Nikki, I'll probably get an update from Robert in Australia, or I don't know if she's online. Maybe Jen. Of course, she's in Western Australia, so, but not that that makes that. Yeah, there's a lot to worry about.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe this is where I channel my inner Dylan Thomas, having mentioned Bob Dylan winning the Nobel. You know, of course, he instead of going into the world as Robert Zimmerman, he took the name of one of his favorite poets, who happened to be Dylan Thomas. And Dylan Thomas, of course, famously wrote, "Do not go gentle into that good night. Age should rage at the dying of the light." And I can't just sit back and say, well, you know, it's inevitable.
Well, I don't want to sit back and say it's inevitable either, but while we're arguing over protest votes and, you know, grabbing people by the crotches and everything else that, you know, is going on, it seems entirely petty compared to finding out that our oceans are becoming so acidic that life can't even be sustained anymore.
So acidic they will dissolve calcium carbonate. Charming. Because, of course...
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, so acidic that they'll dissolve calcium carbonate.
Okay.
Coral, you know. Coral.
Right. Coral's I know it's calcium.
Yeah, calcium carbonate. More or less the same thing that, you know, eventually if you put enough pressure on it and time and heat, you get limestone. Because that's what limestone is.
And that's not good, right?
Right. You know, one of those early experiments when you're a little kid and they're trying to teach you about science and teach you about it in such a way that you won't burn your own house down or anything. You know, you take a little piece of limestone and you put some strong vinegar on it and it bubbles. Because
right.
The vinegar, the acid, is eating through the limestone. And, you know, if you're a second grader or something, wow.
That's cool, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a rock. I mean, you throw that at your buddies. You throw them, and they hurt when they hit. But really? You can put something on it, it'll just dissolve that? Then you start thinking, well, I need to dissolve all the rocks in Paul's driveway.
Let's not do that.
Practical science.
Unless you're a second grader, then I guess, you know, you'll probably get overlooked doing that. Maybe yelled at a little bit.
I'm sure when he was a second grader, Donald Trump was, you know, pulling the wings off butterflies.
But, I mean, that is a huge chunk of ocean. You know, it's larger than the United Kingdom is.
Oh, but what about the giant garbage patch in the Pacific?
Oh, well, there's one in the Atlantic, too. Didn't you know there's one in every
Yeah,
body of water that's
because
out there?
Everywhere, but right, because the ocean is just our sewer.
Mm-hmm.
And enlightened species would look at the ocean and recognize it as, you know, that's our little bassinet. That's where we came. That's where we were an infant species.
Right.
But the overfishing of the oceans, the species depletion of the oceans. You know, when Thor Heyerdahl that did the Kon-Tiki? They remarked on there were fish everywhere. You could not, you know, properly equipped, you could not starve to death on a long outrigger canoe voyage.
Well, you can't even trust the food in the ocean anymore anyway, even when you do try to buy it. There was stories out that over in Japan, I think it is, they're injecting silicone into shrimp to sell that makes them look bigger and juicier. So people are just biting into, you know, a little piece of shrimp and a bunch of fucking breast implant material. Lovely.
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper?
It is a good thing I hate seafood.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I don't.
I never did like it. That's just me, you know, but, you know, I'll eat it if I absolutely have to. You know, I'll eat certain stuff. But, you know, that, I mean, it's really just sad. I mean, it really just takes everything else out of perspective and says that this is more important, you know. And I know people will say, well, if you vote for the right way, you know, the right person or such and such, you know, that, you know, we might be able to save some of the oceans. But, I mean, almost all of the reefs are dead. You know, they've already declared the South Pacific Coral Triangle dead, the Florida Reef off the Keys. You know, there's not many left. So what are we going to do? You know, besides allow, you know, and then we just allow people to drill more underwater, frack, and dump that shit out everywhere. You know, it's just... They can, and the people that are trying to do good, the ones that I do, I had seen an article where people were taking plastic out of the oceans and turning them into houses, which was great, you know, for, you know, places down in like the third world and stuff, you know, where they don't have a lot of, you know, bad weather that can live in a built plastic house out of brick plastic, you know. I mean, they could do that, but it's going to take thousands of years at this point to pull all that plastic out of the ocean.
There's actually there's a project beginning in the next couple of months. I heard recently, maybe we talked about it on the program, that seeks to gather it up. And at least it's a start. I mean, I'm no Pollyanna, Nikki, but you got to make the effort. And the problem is how difficult it is to make the effort. It's one step forward and two steps back. You know, so we're going to try to gather up the garbage patch in the Pacific, but, oh, look, we're going to explore for more fucking oil in the Gulf, right? Because one BP Horizon disaster isn't too many. And that's kind of it. That's kind of at the bottom of it, isn't it? We haven't figured out that one of these disasters is too many. I mean, in addition to the hog manure lagoons that I was talking about with Todd, there's also the coal ash ponds in North Carolina. Now, understand, there's not a scrap of coal to be mined in North Carolina. Everything that North Carolina gets comes from places like Appalachia. But North Carolina burns more mountaintop removal coal than any other state in the Union. And once it's burned, you got to do something with the ash. And so they've got these monster ash dams, ash lagoons, seas. And those things could be overtopped, and those dams could collapse. And that is going to be a sure enough shitstorm. And it'll happen
because nobody figured out that one ash dam collapse was one too many. And yeah, as Dogman points out in the chat room, that'll be because of Duke Power. Who did the governor of North Carolina work for? Duke Power. I mean, votes have, you know, what Al Gore said yesterday in Miami, every vote counts. And so, you know, the political is not necessarily as attenuated from reality as we might like to think it is. There are consequences. I mean, I'm sick to death, and I'm filibobstering at you, Nikki, and I apologize. Are you still there? Nikki? Nikki? Well, I'll leave her.
Oh, I'm still muted. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, no,
I do have a bad connection, so it is hard to hear you a little bit because I live out in, you know, the middle of Amish country and don't get a great phone signal. But
yeah. But what I was going to say is, you know, throughout the political campaign, Hillary Clinton has tried to show that she cares about Appalachia by saying, we've got to help those people. We've got to help those miners. Well, you know what? There really aren't that many miners. It's not just miners that need help in Appalachia. It's all of Appalachia. And you know, you want to help Appalachia, stop mountaintop removal. And yeah, Hillary, go ahead. Kill the whole goddamn coal industry. Do it, because the only way West Virginia and other and Kentucky and Southwest Virginia and Northeast Tennessee are ever going to even begin to think about another way of living is when that shit is gone.
Agreed.
Which is kind of interesting, because before the exploitation of coal reserves here, you had a lot of people who were living sustainably and fairly successfully from a subsistence standpoint. And what you've got now are there remnant progeny who are worse off now, honestly, than their great-great-grandparents were.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, sure, there's electricity and better medicine, easier transportation. But in terms of just being successful and viable as human communities, we're worse off.
No. Oh, definitely worse off. I mean, you can't, your land is tainted, so you can't grow food. Your air is poisoned. So, you know, I've heard you talk many times about pregnant women who have babies with tumors in them because they're breathing in the air particulate, you know. And didn't that happen a few years ago where you guys had some flooding and some of the sludge pits got overflowed into the rivers?
Oh, it happens. Or sometimes they just have spills. Doesn't even necessarily have to be raining.
I think I remember seeing something about somebody's place got cut off because they lived like right near one, and the mud just overtook like their whole driveway and passed down to the main road.
Oh, that was 2000. That was 2001, Martin County, Kentucky, when a mountain filled with toxic coal waste blew out.
That's the one I'm talking about. Yeah. So I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately, and they don't have any plans on fixing any of that. You know, they just take it as it happens. You know, they don't have any kind of plan for, well, you know, a contingency plan. Like, if this is going to happen, they don't consider that stuff. They just consider what they can do right now.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but it's just this, I mean, and it's terrible, you know, what's going on, you know, down there and the people that are getting hit, you know, from the hurricane. But like you said, you know, people in Haiti have it way much worse. Where's people talking about that? You know, where's, you know, nobody wants to go help Haiti anymore.
Well, you know, at least we are here. And, you know, other progressives are talking about it too.
But you know, even among the for profit, look, I got sucked into it. I'm guilty of it. The first hour of this program was nothing but sick, disgusting news about Donald Trump.
I know. I was listening.
Because it's you can't look away.
I'm trying to. I really am. I'm just so disgusted by it all. I can't take it anymore.
But there's an avalanche of it. I mean, just in the time I've been on the air, another story's broken that when he was making The Apprentice. You know who Marley Matlin is? Actress?
Yeah, she's deaf. Deaf lady.
Yeah. Yeah, he called her retarded.
Back in his time, they did, though. I mean, I'm not defending it whatsoever, but, you know,
No. This isn't 1970-something. This is, you know, 2011.
I thought the 50s, though. I was saying more like in the 50s, but...
No, this is 2011. He called Marley Matlin retarded.
That's a shame, because she's a brilliant actress and a wonderful lady who does a lot of things for the deaf community and others. So, you know, I'm surprised she even went on the show.
So,
you know, but, you know, the man's just poison inside and out. You know, I mean, there's just nothing to it at this point, and I'm so disgusted with, you know, trying so hard up here in Ohio to, you know, have hope. But, you know, I see maybe one Hillary sign for every 30 Trump signs. So it's, you know, and early voting started yesterday or today in Ohio. So, you know, they can't take them off the ballot, you know, and give us somebody else to look at. But, you know, we're stuck between voting for these two people. I know some people get the option to vote Jill Stein, but I don't. Not here.
Jill Stein is not an option.
Not in Ohio.
Not anywhere. Jill Stein's a cipher. Jill Stein is engaged in an act of vanity for Jill Stein. Jill Stein is
no,
a joke.
As much as I don't want to upset any of your audience members, I agree with you, you know, because she could do better. I mean, if she were a serious candidate, she would have been doing things over the last 4-8 years to make herself more known.
Or even further back, maybe she would have gone from city council to county commission, or maybe tried to run for the Massachusetts State House, done something to show that she was actually serious about learning the business of government.
Right, instead she just pops up every 4 years like a weasel out of a hole and says, hey, here I am, I'm different, vote for me.
By the way, our buddy David down in Australia, subject line, Great Barrier Reef. Hey, Bob, David writes, visited the Great Barrier Reef last Christmas with the kids, definitely not dead. Parts are, but not all. We saw many fish and many colors. So
maybe there is some hope left.
It's
still on its deathbed.
Well, you know, letting coal tankers drive through it on the way to coal ships on the way to China, where they, you know, lose coal and probably not a good idea.
Not a good idea. No. That's so, just asking it for more, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just insane. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's still somewhat alive then, though, that some people get to still enjoy it. But I still feel that at this point, you know, it's almost too late for the oceans. You know, and that's why we see all this crazy weather. We see this, you know... we shouldn't be having 100-degree temperatures in Northeast Ohio, you know, in July before the actual you know, summer season comes in and stuff. I mean, it was, it's just been so dry and hot up here this year that I almost felt like I lived in the Southwest.
And so that's just...
That's basically what I wanted to call it about, because I was, you know, hearing about everybody complaining about other stuff, and I'm like, you know what, I'm really upset and sad to hear that, you know, this great part of our life, livelihood, the ocean, is, you know, dying. And, you know, there's so many millions of people that depend on what's in them oceans for food and, you know, other things that, you know, as soon as those are toxic and we can't take food from the oceans, we're all pretty much fucked. It's game over.
Yep. Well, Nikki, it's awfully good to hear from you. Thomas says hi.
Oh, okay. Hi, Tom. I'll talk to him later on, and I'll let you go so you can wrap up your show. But thanks a lot, Bob, for taking my call, and you have a great evening.
Absolutely my pleasure. Good to hear from you, Nikki. Take care.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye. Nikki Goldenheart from FYINation.com. Good to hear from Nikki. If you want to wrap up the evening in conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. You know the numbers, 304-663-4676. And 304-574-8178. And, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. Yeah, I doubt by any stretch of the imagination that David in Australia is suggesting that, you know, everything's hunky-dory. There are very serious efforts underway in Australia to preserve, protect, and save the Great Barrier Reef. God, I'd love to see it. It'd be beautiful. Let's see. What else? Oh, I mentioned, you know, we didn't get to do prayer meeting Wednesday. So I've got a prayer meeting Wednesday story. You know that bastion of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical fundamentalists, the Amosexual College, Liberty University? Well, Jerry Falwell Jr., who inherited that grift from his daddy, who is busy turning on a spit somewhere in hell and being periodically bathed in his own juices. God, it's almost enough to make you wish you could believe in hell to think of an image like that, isn't it? You know, or maybe go all, speaking of Nickies, go all Little Nicky and just imagine Jerry Falwell getting a pineapple rammed up his ass well, there's no right end of a pineapple now, is there? But, you know, with the bushy end first, yeah, it's deeply satisfying. But there's a little, there's a little palace coup taking place at Falwell U. Because Jerry Falwell Jr. insists, no matter what, on, and here I am doing it again, going back to the Trump stuff, but he insists on keeping his nose so far up the rectum of Donald Trump that when Donald Trump yawns, you can see Jerry Falwell Jr.'s smiling face. And even after the whole grab 'em tape came out, tape, recording, Jerry Falwell Jr. doubled down and will not criticize him and will not disassociate himself or the Savior whom he allegedly worships from Trump's disgusting behavior. It's gotten so bad and so embarrassing at Falwell U. that a group of the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual fundamentalists has risen up in rebellion against Jerry Falwell Jr. They call themselves Liberty United Against Trump. LUAT. Got to work on that name, guys. And they issued a statement. In the months since Jerry Falwell Jr. endorsed him, Donald Trump has been inexorably associated with Liberty University. We are Liberty students who are disappointed with President Falwell's endorsement and are tired of being associated with one of the worst presidential candidates in American history. Donald Trump does not represent our values, and we want nothing to do with him. A majority of Liberty students, faculty, and staff feel as we do. Donald Trump received a pitiful 90 votes from Liberty students in Virginia's primary elections, a colossal rejection of his campaign. Nevertheless, President Falwell eagerly uses his national platform to advocate for Donald Trump. While he occasionally clarifies that supporting Trump is not the official position of Liberty University, he knows it is his title of president of the largest Christian university in the world that gives him political credentials. Really? Largest Christian university in the world? Let's check into that. Probably depends on the definition of Christian. Associating any politician with Christianity is damaging to the gospel of Jesus Christ. I will not argue with that. But Donald Trump is not just any politician. He has made his name by maligning others and bragging about his sins. Not only is Donald Trump a bad candidate for president, he is actively promoting the very things that we as Christians ought to oppose. A recently uncovered tape revealed his comments bragging about sexually assaulting women. Any faculty or staff member at Liberty would be terminated for such comments. And yet when Donald Trump makes them, President Falwell rushes eagerly to his defense, taking the name Liberty University with him. We're all sinners, Falwell told the media, as if sexual assault is a shoulder-shrugging issue rather than an atrocity which plagues college campuses across America, including our own. It is not enough to criticize these kinds of comments. We must make clear to the world that while everyone is a sinner and everyone can be forgiven, a man who constantly and proudly speaks evil does not deserve our support nor for the nation's highest office. Jesus tells a story in the Bible about a man who tries to remove a speck of dust from his brother's eye while he has a log stuck in his own. You hypocrite, Jesus says, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. We Liberty students are often told to support Donald Trump because the other leading candidate is a bad option. Perhaps this is true. Oh, shit. But the only candidate who is directly associated with Liberty University is Donald Trump. Because our president has led the world to believe that Liberty University supports Donald Trump, we students must take it upon ourselves to make it clear that Donald Trump is absolutely opposed to what we believe and does not have our support. We are not proclaiming our opposition to Donald Trump out of bitterness, but out of a desire to regain the integrity of our school. Ouch. While our president, Jerry Falwell Jr., tours the country championing the log in his eye. Oh, snap! We want the world to know how many students oppose him. We don't want to champion Donald Trump. We want only to be champions for Christ. And you know what? That is actually what the Southern Baptist Church used to sound like. Never mind the goofy theology. Once upon a time, the Baptist churches, the American Baptists and the Southern Baptists, stridently stayed away, eschewed as harmful politics. But it was Jerry Falwell who dragged the church, dragged the Baptists into the muck and mire and vicious filth of right-wing politics. Why? For power. That really is quite stunning. Quite surprising. And you know, goofy theology aside, little golf clap to the Liberty students who had enough courage to put their name on a statement and tell Jerry Falwell Jr. to go Falwell himself. Note coming in from Michael in Madison, Next Generation, lost episode, scene. The Enterprise D swoops into orbit around a distant planet on the edge of the Federation after receiving an urgent subspace distress signal. Data. Captain, the oceans of this planet are reaching dangerously acidic levels. Essentially, the oceans are dying. Picard.
Mr. Worf, hail the surface.
Scene. Picard speaks to the leaders of the planet while Data and Geordi are already devising a solution to jerry-rig the ocean's chemical composition using the ship's main deflector dish in some unconventional and innovative way. However, it turns out that the leaders of the planet did not send the distress signal because their planet is dying. Much to the crew's astonishment, the planet's population is bickering about a protest vote and a pussy grabber at Mar-a-Lago. Picard sends Counselor Troi to search the ship's computer translation matrix because the Universal Translator does not know what the fuck a pussy grabber is. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra wasn't half this bewildering. Picard sighs to himself. Picard, I'll be in my ready room, said with disappointment. Number one, you have the bridge. I won't spoil the ending. Signed, Michael. Oh, I want to know how it ends. Shaka, when the oceans died. That's how it ends. So it's time to get out of here. Again, sorry about last night. Thanks thanks for jumping in there, Glenn and Bill. We've got $155 to raise to stay even for Friday on the front porch. Y'all have a great evening. And I'll try to get the podcast unsquirreled. May take a little bit of time. And again, if you ever have trouble getting the podcast, go to podbean.com, podbean.com. Search Head On with Bob Kincaid, and you'll find it. Because it's there. And you can listen on your phone, or you can set up downloads to land, you know, whenever a new one, all of that. That's all available there, podbean.com. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Come Monday, I'll be down at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection along with other Coal River Mountain Watch members and allies as we try to save Coal River Mountain, which has been slated for destruction and from the permitting of like 4,000 plus acres of brand new mountaintop removal permits, because, you know, coal is dead, right? No. And stop saying that. If you're anywhere near, come on by. Add your voice to ours. You'll be welcome. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.